As we say in davening on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, the three mitzvot that really identify this period are tshuva, tefillah, and tzedakah. So last year, around this time, when I was giving parents on learning, I spoke about tshuva, and specifically, I wanted to talk about, since a year ago, I had just submitted the manuscript for my book, and now it's almost done. These things take a long time. Thank you, Mordechai. Thank you for the shout-out. So I dealt with the question of how tshuva has been shaped by the world that we live in, with social media and instant communication, and how now, when it's so easy to send out a mass WhatsApp or post on Instagram or TikTok or Facebook or whatever you want to post on, I'm sorry for everything I did. Does that count as an apology? What is the nature of an apology? So that was what we talked about last year, and I figured this year I'd move to the next one and to talk about tefillah. And what I want to do is understand the nature of tefillah and then think about how tefillah has been changed by the world that we live in. And specifically, the fact that we are so connected to everyone, whether we know them or not, means that I assume if anyone here is like me, you often will get a request to daven for pick a name, and either you don't know that person at all, or maybe you know that person's cousin's cousin, or something like that, right? And we're constantly, we get these, right? Please daven for this person. They had a terrible accident. They're sick. And at first glance, it's a wonderful thing. Like, why shouldn't we daven for other people? Right, what's wrong with davening for someone we don't know? So we care about more people in the world. But what I think is important is to realize that that's not obvious at all, that that's okay. Or not that it's okay, but that if we're going to daven for strangers, complete strangers, it forces us to ask, well, what is tefillah such that that makes sense at all? So if I asked you, what does it mean to daven for someone else, right? I understand. I don't want to get into the deep theological questions. What does davening mean? Meaning, is davening really about requesting something from God? Is it more reflective that I'm reflecting the fact that I need things from God? Right? Whether you take the Maimonidean approach, or you take the Hirshian approach, which both are more self-reflective. I don't want to get deep into theology. I want to say very simply, right? What are you doing when you daven for someone else? Right, so when you daven for yourself, I understand. What are you doing when you daven for yourself? Be very pashut, very right. What are you doing when you daven for yourself? You're asking Hashem for whatever you need. Now, again, does that mean that tefillah works simply because I'm asking for it, and now God might say yes, might say no? Is it because it changes me as a person? Is it because I reflect on the fact that God can provide it, and that changes where I stand theologically, and therefore I deserve to get it? However you want to take it theologically, what I am literally doing is I am asking God for something that I need. And what spurs me to ask God for that? You want it. Thank you. That was what I wanted. You want it, right? You want it. And again, so why do you ask God? Is it because, right? However you want to do it theologically. But the point is, you want it or you need it, depending on what it is. And you recognize that God is the one who can provide it. So at a very simple level, the idea that when I need something, I turn to God, that need is a mechayev, that need generates an obligation to turn to God because I'm supposed to recognize that which I need in life can be provided by God and God alone. Right? That makes sense. Okay, that makes sense. Now, whether you think that tefillah is a mitzvah or whether you think tefillah is an opportunity, again, a separate shiur, but very briefly, according to the Rambam, right, there's a mitzvah to daven once a day. According to the Ramban, there is either no mitzvah to daven at all, tefillah is an opportunity, and that God allows you to daven, or it's an obligation only when? In an Eitz Hara, right? In a case where there is a need, it happens to be that people forget that the Rambam also believes that there's a special mitzvah Eitz Hara. It's just that it's not in Hilchot Tefillah, it's in Hilchot Ta'aniyot, right? In Hilchot Ta'aniyot, the Rambam lists a separate mitzvah. There is a difference between the Rambam and the Ramban of whether it's tzara for the tzibur or tzara for the yachid. But whether you think it's a mitzvah or whether you think it's a mitzvah every day, right, tefillah, the idea that you should turn to God when you need it, that's agreed upon by the Rambam, the Ramban, whether it's the fundamental mitzvah of tefillah or a secondary mitzvah of tefillah, right? That makes sense. What about for other people? What justifies davening for other people? Why do I daven? What does it mean to daven for somebody else? You, okay, so let's push that farther. You're caring for them. So what? One second. Yeah, and?
What do you mean by
that? No, I want to push that. It's good, but I want to push. What do you mean it's you're caring? Therefore what?
Therefore, you have an obligation to care about it. Therefore, it's all an obligation.
Okay, good. So one way of saying it is, look, I have an obligation to care for other people. And one of the ways that I care for other people is by governing for them. And however prayer works for me, it works for them, and therefore I'm taking care of them. And that is probably the logic behind the fact that one of the three components that the Torah lists as part of the mitzvah of Bikur Cholim, of visiting the sick, is davening for the sick person. Right? That, for the Torah, is one of the three, right, based on the Ramban, is one of the three central parts. And according to many poskim, if you visit a sick person and you don't daven for them, you don't fulfill the mitzvah. Right, that's how central it is. And that's probably based on this notion that I daven for other people because it's part of how I care for them. Why else might you daven for somebody else? Yeah, Rudy. Okay, so Rudy uses a very suggestive word. He says, for selfish reasons. Now, selfish could be a very negative word. But let's remove the judgment for a second. Right? I don't actually think it's a bad thing. Right? Why change the word selfish for a second, or forget selfish, say the exact same thing that you did, but say it in a positive light.
We're davening because we love someone so much, we don't want to lose them.
And therefore,
we want them to get better.
And therefore, it's our need, thank you, Ezra. Right? That when we daven for someone who's close to us, right, it is fundamentally selfish. But if it's selfish, not in a bad way, right, what's driving me to daven in the end of the day is, again, my need. And as we already said, that makes sense. That is the paradigm of tefillah. I'm davening because I recognize that I need something and God can provide it. And therefore, if I wanted to put it legally, okay, in America, this is not true in Israel, which is part of the mess of our legal system, right? But in America, if you want to bring a case to court, what do you need? What is the first thing that you need to establish if you want to bring a case to court? Yeah, what's that called? It's called standing. You need to establish standing. You need to show why the case affects you, right? You can't, this is not lumdos, right? It's not like I'm interested in this theoretical case, so I'm going to bring it to court to see what the courts will say about this question. That's not how things work in American law. It is in Israeli law. Right? In Israeli law, you can totally do that, and that's part of the mess, right? In Israel, you do not need standing. You can bring a court case that you are not connected to the Supreme Court directly. Don't ask, right? It's a mess. But in America, you can't. You need standing. So one way of thinking about davening for people I'm close to is that even though it's not me, because I care about them, and if something happened, then it would hurt me. So I have standing. If I have standing, I can turn to God. Yeah, Josh. That's very formal. No, I don't think so. I mean, could you say that you're fulfilling their obligation? I don't think so, right? I don't think so for many reasons. First of all, this is not a mitzvah that only one person needs to do, right? What do you mean? Could you through Areva, could you eat a kezayit of matzah for somebody else? No, because you need to and they need to, right? If you think that you're chayev to turn to God, be'et sarah, so they're be'et sarah, they have to daven. Right, and if you feel personally affected by their illness, just like they do, then you're in an etzara and you're obligated. So you can't fulfill their obligation. Who said they're not able to do it themselves? If they're in a case that they're not able to, forget a case where they're in a coma, right, where they can't do it, fine, right? But someone's sick, they have, rachmana litzlan, pick your right? Pick your disease that they have, that they're conscious, right? But this gets a little bit tricky when you're talking about somebody else, someone you don't know. Now, again, I'm going to prove, let's establish this, and I'm going to prove halachically that what I'm saying actually matters, right? Because right now I'm talking in the air, but I want to talk about how, I want to prove that this matters, okay? Yeah, Ezra. Hold the thought. Right, Ezra says, aren't our tefillah in the Rabban? Yes, hold that thought, very important, as we'll see in the Rishonim, okay? Yes and no. Yes and no. We'll see. Right? You'll see. But what about a stranger? So, I want to start off with a story to highlight this issue. And this is a story by Shlomo Zalman Orbach that he told from Mariel Diskin. And then I want to explain the halachic basis for it and come back to it, okay? So, the story we can read in English in the first source. So, this is in Halichot Shlomo, which is a record of Shlomo Zalman Orbach's customs. And he said, our master customarily said that one should not pray for an ill person during the Amidah unless one has some connection to him and one feels his pain. For one should not come to the King of Kings, God, without a reason and justification for pushing to ask for someone else, or what we call in English, standing. Right? You should not come before God unless you have standing. He would tell of the Maril Diskin that once someone asked him to pray for an ill person, and he agreed, after instructing him, as was his practice, to contribute a particular sum to the orphanage. And after some time, the Maharil met him and asked after the ill person's welfare. And he replied, the person had already become healthy with God's help. The Maharil thundered at him for not telling him of this and burdening him with prayer for that person all this time, saying, is it light in your eyes making such a request in prayer? One must seek and find a reason to pray each time. And our master also thundered regarding this, and he once rebuked a student who delayed telling him about his salvation through God's generosity. He said, three times each day I pain myself and feel your suffering. And why did you only now decide to tell me? Right, so what is Rosh Shlomo Zalman saying from the Maril Diskin? Let's just get, what is he saying? Yes, Josh. Before you have a question, answer my question. What's he saying? You have to have a connection to feel his pain. Now, did he know these people? Maril Diskin. Did he know the people were sick? Doesn't sound like it. So how did he come up with a connection that justified davening for him? What? Right, meaning he developed, right? He made himself feel before he davened. Right? But what you see is that what did Rosh Shlomo Zalman and Maril Diskin feel was necessary for tefillah? You need to care directly. Right, deeply in this case. Right? It needs to become personal. How it becomes personal for a stranger is a very good question. Right? But it needs to become personal. Yes, Josh, what's your question? What?
It says Rebbe has to be related.
Or Kesher. A Kesher. Okay, so how to develop a Kesher? Meaning he did, well, is it? If you actually feel the point where you feel the pain, right, that you to the point where you get upset, no, that's not true. You can make yourself feel, right? If you, it might not be a pre-existing kesher, right? But you can do that. You can do that, right? It's hard, and we're going to question this, right? But what's clear is that the Maril Diskin and Rosh Shlomo Zalman felt that tefillah by its definition requires you to have some sort of vested interest in the prayer, right? You can't just pray for someone because. Right? It has to become personal. How you make it personal when it isn't personal is a very interesting question. They seem to have done it. Okay. We'll go this way across. Yeah.
So, you know those, like, commercials on TV, you know, like people with cancer?
Yep.
And they're, like, supposed to be, like all sympathetic?
Yep.
So, you feel bad for them, and like, it, like, hits you, like a little bit.
Yep.
I wouldn't say that you would have a pleasure with that.
Good. So, what do we call that? Well, unclear, right? There are two different emotions that you could be feeling at that point, and they're different and important in different and important ways, right? You could be feeling sympathy, and you could be feeling empathy, right? What's the difference? Sympathy is I care for them. Empathy is I feel their pain. Right? That's what empathy is. Right? That's actually one of the dangers of empathy. Right? Is that you feel the other person's pain and therefore can sometimes be irrational. Right? There have been, some of my guys know that I am partial to a provocative book called Against Empathy, which is which the front cover is a heart in an ice cube by Paul Bloom, where he argues exactly this, that empathy, right, sympathy, you could have rational sympathy or rational compassion, where I feel bad for you and I think how I can help you. Empathy is where I feel your pain and therefore I work to relieve my own pain, right? That can be a very powerful force, but sometimes it's dangerous because, right, it can lead you to do irrational things. So, for example, right, his classic example is if I bring my 9-year-old in, my 9-year-old does not like shots, bichlal, right? The second you tell him he's getting a vaccine, you know, a meltdown for half an hour, right? Screaming, yelling, if like, you know, if I feel his pain, right, I am not going to let him have the vaccine. But if I care about him and I don't let myself feel the pain or be driven by the fact that I feel his current pain, then I'll do what I think is best for him, which is to give him the vaccine.
So you're saying
this, right? So I do wonder, I feel like this is more empathy, right? That he's generating empathy. You can do that, right? You can. Empathy is one of those things where I can actually come to mimic the pain, right? Feel the pain through mirror neurons in myself. Right, I don't want to get into the psychology of it. You can ask Dr. Aronson, for the moment we'll call him Doctor because he knows this more, and that's his day job, where he can explain to you this better than I can. But you can actually use mirror neurons to actually feel that. But that's a story for another time. Yeah, Ezra.
Doesn't he say you can't ask without a reason and justification? That doesn't mean you have to feel terrible or feel their pain.
So he definitely clearly felt that. Right? But you're right, right? You could say a justification is different, and that's where we're going to talk about what that justification is. Rudy.
So, let's say you're a deep-realist, right? So, here's the problem.
Yeah.
Is like in those WhatsApp groups, like, send the name of a person.
Yep.
Pray for this person that they're going to get better. But, like, the model said, he got really upset because they never told him the person got better. How are we allowed to document for these people? We don't know if they get better. Most times.
Yeah, that's also a problem, right? Is that if you really took it seriously, right, you would follow it up, or you'd follow up. Right? Meaning based on the moral discipline, if you really felt like you really felt for them, then you would follow up. Right? You got very good. Well then do you care or do the people really expect you to care, right? If they don't follow up with you or you don't bother following up, what does that show about how vested interest you have in this person getting better? Okay. Fine. I want to try to justify this. Oh, yeah. I don't know. I don't know whether he generated it as natural. What? I don't know, right? If you naturally feel everyone's pain, sure. But if you really, really felt the pain, you'd follow up, right? If you had a good friend who was sick, Rahman al-Islam, right, you would follow up to see if they were doing better, right? Yeah, that's not the same. Well, let's talk about whether it's the right type of concern, right? That's what we're going to see. That all of what I'm talking in the air, we're going to justify halakhically and show how this actually has a halakhic expression. I'm never going to get past this. Yes, Moshe.
The person who's asking people to pray for your sake. I don't have an uncle, so I can say, if my uncle was sick, I went on the group chat and said, everyone, please pray for my uncle. It may not be me saying, please pray for my uncle. It's me saying, my uncle is sick, and I feel really bad, and I'm scared to keep my job.
Yes.
I want you all to comfort me in that.
That's possible. It's also possible that you're asking people to daven because of your pain, right? Meaning that they care about you, which might work at one step of removal, might not work at five steps of removal, right? I mean, it might be that if you had a relative who was sick, so I care about you, so I daven for them to get better for your sake, right? But if you had a cousin who had a neighbor who had a roommate, right? Sure, whose fish was sick, right? There's a limit to my compassion, right? I understand all of you might be much kinder than I am, but that's like, you know, I don't know where my empathy tapered off, but it did somewhere, probably around the fish part, you know? Fine. Okay, but let's analyze this halachically, okay? So, I gave you the Avudraham in number 2, and the Avudraham tells us a history. Okay, I'm not going to read the Avodram inside. Who read the Avodram? Okay, good. So the Avodram tells a history of tefillah. What does he tell us about tefillah? What is the history of tefillah?
Well, originally, in its perfected form, you have tefillah d'oraisa, which is as many times as you want, as long or short as you want.
Okay, good. Right, so we start. The biblical mitzvah is, according to the Avodram, once a day, like the Rambam, right, minimum, and then as many times as you want. Okay? Besides for the daily mitzvah, right? What does it mean when you say that originally tefillah was as many times as you want? What is the key to that? What is that telling you conceptually about tefillah? When you say that tefillah originally is whenever you want, what does that tell you about the nature of tefillah?
It's subjective.
It's subjective. Or in the language of the Gemara, I didn't give it to you, right? But he's channeling the Gemara, which says that in theory you can daven all day because, right? Because what do we call tefillah? So sometimes called about the shalev, right? Right? But we say, liboy rachameh, you can ask for mercy. Meaning, in the end of the day, if tefillah at its core is about asking for things, so whenever you feel like you need something, right? So you're supposed to daven. Right? In its purest form, tefillah has, even if you have to daven every day, right? Still, how you daven and how many times you daven is not determined. What determines it is when I feel like I should be davening, which means that at its core, tefillah is about channeling your needs at that moment, right? That's the core of tefillah, right? Then what happens? What's the history?
Then the Jews go into Galut.
The Jews go into Galut, and they don't know how to speak any languages, right? Forget Hebrew. They don't speak anything, right? They chatsi ashdodit, chatsi this, right? They speak like most of us speak, right? A little bit of this, a little bit of English, a little bit of Hebrew, a little bit of Yiddish, a little bit of whatever we speak, right? We don't even realize that we're not speaking English, right? We think we're speaking English. We're not, right? Like when we say we're learning, which obviously is Yiddish, right? Not English, because learn and study, right? When we study Torah, right? When we learn Torah, you're really saying the Yiddish, we learn, which means to study, because in English it's study, not learn. Learn means to learn something new, right? Okay. Anyways, so they didn't know any language. Good. So they didn't know any language. So the Anshei Knesset of Gola said, you don't know any language. What do we need to do?
So we'll make a concise and clear.
Good. So we make a concise and clear tefillah, which we call the Amidah. So now if I ask you, conceptually, what happened between the original tefillah and formalized tefillah? The original tefillah, we said, its nature, its definition at the end of the day is, I daven for that which I need. And based on how often I feel like I need it, I capture that need in verbal prayer. Great. Then I formalize it. Now what? What is the relationship between that definition of tefillah and the formalized prayer that we have? Therefore what? What? So what are you telling me? It's on the community. So what does that mean? And therefore what? That's a description. But what is the essence? Has the nature of tefillah changed? So one way of taking it is that, yes, the nature of tefillah has changed. It used to be that tefillah was about channeling my personal requests, and now it's not, because it's formal. That's one way of taking it, right? That it's not just that when and how I daven changed, but that by changing when and how I daven, I've changed the nature of tefillah itself. That it used to be about expressing my needs, like my visceral desire, and now it's not. Right? Okay, Ezra.
I would argue that it didn't change, like, the nature of it didn't change. Just now they set up, this, like, three times a day you're asking for, I guess, all your needs. Like, they're just deciding what your needs
good,
are.
Good, right? The other way to take it, and that's, I'm more partial to this, is what Ezra says, is no. Why is the Avodram telling you this history of tefillah? Not because the nature of tefillah changed, but because, I'll add a little bit to Ezra, the danger of formalized tefillah is that, what will you think tefillah is now? Like what Ezra, like Eitan said, I'm not, you could be right, but I'll set up the other position. Right, that you might think that by formalizing, we've now said tefillah isn't about necessarily what you're feeling now. It's just like, these are the things that you should have a checklist of the things you should check in with God about. Or you could say, like Ezra is saying, no, that's what you might think. What they're doing instead is making sure that you articulate these needs. So these are the things that people need. And you should be feeling that these are things you need. And therefore, we give you a language to express it. But fundamentally, the core of tefillah, the idea that you daven without what you need, stayed the same. It's just that we formalized how you say it and when you say it. So now, let's go to the key sugya in Avodah Zarah Daf Chet. Okay? So the Gemara says as follows. Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, halacha shoel adam tzrachah v'shomea tefillah. The halacha is that you can ask for your needs in the bracha of shomea tefillah. Hear our prayer. Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, halacha k'derei chachamim. Amar Rav Yehuda, b'rei de Rav Shmuel, bar sheilat mishmei de Rav. Afal b'shamru shoel adam tzrachah v'shomea tefillah. Even though we say you can ask for what you need in the bracha of Shomei Tefillah, in the generic, listen to our prayer, aval im ba lomar b'sof kol bracha u'bracha, me'en kol bracha u'bracha, omer. But if you want to pray, you want to ask for something at the end of each thematic bracha, on topic, you can. Amar Rav Chiya bar Ashi amar Rav, afal b'shamru shoel adam tzrachah b'shomei Tefillah, even though we said you can ask for your needs in Shomei Tefillah, im yesh lo chole b'toch beito, omer b'berachat cholim. If you have a sick person in your house, so you daven for him in the bracha of refuah, of healing. Vim tzarech leparnasah, and if you need sustenance, you need a job, omer b'berachat hashanim, so you say it in Baruch Aleinu, which talks about sustenance. And omer b'shua ben Levi, avu b'sha'amru, sho'el adam tzaracha b'shomei Tefillah, even though we say you can ask for your needs in Shomei Tefillah, aval im ba lomar achar tefillato, afilu keseder yom kippurim, omer. But if you want to say at the end of your tefillah something as long as the vidui on Yom Kippur, you're allowed to. Okay. Let's recap the Gemara. There are four different stages. What are they? When can you ask for your tefillah? When in tefillah, rather, can you ask for your needs? What four are identified?
The specific bracha.
The specific bracha in the middle. The specific bracha at the end. Right? Shema Koleinu and the end of tefillah. Okay? So in the thematic bracha, at the end of the relevant thematic bracha, in Shomei Tefillah, and at the end of davening. Okay? That is all I know from the Gemara so far. What is the difference? So here I have a question. What is the difference between those four? And I want you to translate the following line. Sho'el Adam Tzrachah V'Shomei Tefillah. Someone translate those words for me. A person?
Asks.
Yeah, okay, that's not specific. Asks. Good. You are purposely giving me an ambiguous translation. A person asks. Now add a word to that. Before asks, add a word. Should or may. Thank you. Should or may. Which one? Thank you, Moshe. That was the right answer. Unclear. Sho'el adam tzrachah v'shomei tefillah might mean you are allowed to, and it might mean you must. Those are two very different halachic claims. Right? Those are two very different halachic claims. Saying that you must daven for the relevant thing in the thematic bracha, or rather than saying you can, you may, now I feel like I'm in second grade. Of course you can, but, okay, right? Give me a break. I haven't lived in America in 10 years. Okay. Though, to be fair, I lived in Canada. But there they ask permission for everything. So, like, you know, so we need to, first of all, figure out the difference between these four, and we need to ask, in each case, whether sho'el means you may or you must. Okay? And based on how we answer those questions, we're going to come at very different perspectives on what tefillah, formalized tefillah, is. Yes? Good. That is part of what we're going to ask, right? So that's another question we have to ask, which is, wait a second, if we have all the things covered, so why do we have a catch-all? Yeah, why do we have this Shema Koleinu? Like, what is its point? Okay, good. That we're going to answer that along the way. Yeah.
Well, there's a clear possibility. Either you should or you must say
No, right, but there's four stages, right, that we have to deal with, and then we have to deal in each case whether it's you may or you must in each of them. Oh, yes, meaning within that, correct, I mean, they're not consistent across, right? You could say, I must in Rifaenu, and if I didn't, then I may in Shomei Tevilah, right? Or if I missed it in Shomei Tevilah, I must in Shema Koleinu. But yes, you still have to ask whether there's a hierarchy, right? Or you could, or there's no difference. I could do it here, I could do it there. You're right, right? So that's what we need to figure out. Okay, good. So, Rabbeinu Yonah, who got to Rabbeinu Yonah? Good, we got it. So Rabbeinu Yonah is probably the most careful of the Rishonim in terms of, right, trying to make sure he understands each stage. And Rabbeinu Yonah suggests as followed. He thinks that these four stages are, in fact, four different halachic rules. What are they, Mordechai? You're like, you put a summary. What are you asking me? Yes, I know I put a summary because it's a hard piece in Rabbeinu Yonah. Good. But you tell me, what are the, according to Rabbeinu Yonah, what does this Gemara teach? Let's go through all four stages. Okay, I'll read it. Okay, you'll help me as we go along. In Yan Zeh Mitchalek L'Arba Dinim, this is Source 4. This divides into four halachot. Chalukim, they are different. Ha'echad, Rule 1. Shebi Birkat Shomea Tfila Yachol Lishol Kol Tzrachav. V'chol Inyan Shirtzeh. Shebi Birkat Shomea Tfila Kolele Kol Atzrechem U'likach Nitkina. In Shomea Tfila, you can ask for whatever you want, because that's what the nature of the bracha is. Listen to my prayers. Hadin Hasheni, yeah, Mordechai. Whatever you want, right? Generic personal request. Shomei Tfila. Hadin Hasheni. Shimbalo mar besof kol bracha bracha mein kol bracha bracha. Omer. Vafilu shelo liye letzarchom mamash. Kevan shomer otob lashon rabim. Miu belashon yachid asur la omro. Kevan shein omer otob avur kol Yisrael they have afsaka. So at the end of each bracha, what does it need to be? You can ask a relevant request. How relevant? Somewhat relevant. And why does that have to be somewhat relevant, but not doesn't need to be so relevant? Because the end of the of each bracha is it plural? Very good. Right? Someone made that point. Right? I don't remember who anymore. Right, that the end of the bracha is plural, and therefore something that's vaguely related to the theme can be asked for then. What about in the middle of the bracha? Hadin Ashlishi Shum Shoel Utrachav. So he's medayik. What does the Gemara say? When do you ask in the middle of the bracha? Chole sheyeshlo. Keywords. Next words are betoch beto, in his house. So if it's personal, your home. When do you daven? In the middle of the bracha. And then what's at the end of Shmoneh Esrei? A dinner of E? Whatever you want. Right? Whatever you want. So according to, let's just review. According to Rabbeinu Yonah, but now let's reorganize it, okay? Let's reorganize it in descending order of how personal this is. Okay? What does Rabbeinu Yonah tell you? Rabbeinu Yonah tells you that when I asked you, what is tefillah? And how much do you have to care? And someone said, well, maybe I care about Klal Yisrael. Right? So what does Rabbeinu Yonah say? Exactly. It depends. He said, different levels of caring all count. But there's something very important about Rabbeinu Yonah. They count but what? Yeah, meaning it matters. Meaning you can't just say something that sounds very frum, like, I care about all of Klal Yisrael equally. You can't say that because you don't. That's right. Rabbeinu Yonah's key, right? If we go back to the Avud Raham, we go back to Ezra's point, is that formalized tefillah, right? Is it formal and therefore it doesn't matter how much it affects you? Or does how much it affects you still matter? Yes, does it still matter for Rabbeinu Yonah? It does. What does the formalized Shmoneh Esrei do for Rabbeinu Yonah? Yeah, Moshe. It structures what? It shows you how, and also what it specifically, what does it do? What does it force you to ask yourself? It forces you to ask what? How much does this matter? Right? Meaning, he says, listen, is it legitimate to care about things at different levels? Yes. Is it legitimate to pray for things in different concentric circles of how much they concern me? Yes. Am I allowed to pretend that everybody matters to me as much as my own life or my own sibling or child or parent? No. According to him, you're not allowed to do that. You can't do that. Right? According to him, if something affects you or your family, that is so central to tefillah that where does it go? In the middle of the bracha, the core of the thematic bracha. If it's a little bit less of a concern, right? There's someone sick. It's not my immediate family member. It's not someone I really care about, but it's someone I care about, right? Where does that go? Or someone I know? Where does that go? Nope. At the end of bracha, why? Because it's on theme, but it's B'lashon Rabim. So it makes it clear that it's not me. It's I care as part of a community. And then the things which are more generic and the things that I care about less, I put them in Shema Koleinu and I put them in the end of Tefillah. He's not totally clear how different those are, right? But what Rabbeinu Yonah shows you is that it matters how much you care, and that actually affects Matbeya Brachot. Remember, the number one rule in Tefillah is Kol HaMishaneh MiMatbeya SheTavu Chachamim. Right? Eino Yotzei. Right? Eino Yotzei Dechovato. If you change the language of the bracha, you're not Yotzei. You don't fulfill your bracha. And yet, what? So Rabbeinu Yonah is saying something very important. He says, the middle of the bracha, if it's in your house, that integrates into Matvei HaBracha, into the bracha itself. Right? If it doesn't, and you say it there, according to him, according to Rabbeinu Yonah, the simple pshat, if I daven for someone I don't care enough about in the middle of Shomei Tefillah, in the middle of Rifaino, according to Rabbeinu Yonah, probably it's a hefsek, right? Probably it breaks the bracha because that's not, I'm not allowed to daven for that because it's not that intense. That's not what the middle of the bracha is made for, right? Right, so according to Rabbeinu Yonah, he recognizes different levels of concern, but tefillah, as Moshe said, and right, building what Ezra said before, it doesn't change the nature of tefillah, but what it forces you to do is to structure how much you care, actually force yourself to ask the question, how personal is this? And then find the place in tefillah that articulates that level of concern properly. Right? Otherwise, it's inauthentic, and it breaks Matvei HaBracha. Yeah, Kobe. So that's a good question. I don't know the answer to that question, right? According to Rabbeinu Yonah, what if it's someone you should care about that much and you don't? I don't know. I honestly don't know for Rabbeinu Yonah.
Is he saying that it only ever makes sense to even say it if you care?
Right, so Rabbeinu Yonah, I'm not sure. Like, is B'toch Beito literal? Right, like in your house, does that mean like someone who's a member of my household? Or is it like if it's someone in my household but I don't really care, then I can't? And if someone outside my household but I do care? I don't know the answer to that question. I don't know. Right? Like Big Gadol, I understand what Rabbeinu Yonah is saying. That level of detail is not clear to me. My intuition is B'toch Beito doesn't literally mean like he lives in your four walls, right? Like, I can't imagine, but again, this is just my intuition, that Rabbeinu Yonah is going to say, oh, until your child gets married and moves out of the house, you daven Yerfainu. And the second they get married, right, they get married, it's the middle of Shemar Brachot, and, you know, they fall and they break their leg, right, during the dancing at the wedding, right? So the first day of Shemar Brachot, they're already in their own house, right? But they're, right? They're not living under your... Now, I can't... Yesterday, right, they at the wedding, they hadn't moved out of the house yet, so I can do it in Rifainu. And tomorrow, I can't imagine that's what he thinks. I mean, maybe I'm wrong, but I can't imagine that's what he means. I agree with you, right? But Toch Beito probably doesn't literally mean, like, in your house. And yes, if you had, like, you know, like, oh, someone, you know, broke into my house and is sleeping on the floor... Right, and they're clearly sick. Like, oh, that's the person I say in Rifainu. No, like, maybe I'm kind and they don't kick the poor person out of my house immediately, right? But presumably, that's not what he means by Toch Beito. Right? That's my guess. I could be wrong. Okay. Okay. Yeah, Mordechai.
stick the if you stick your personal request inside of Grappa, then why wouldn't you change the Grappa from the Grappa part of Grappa from communal to personal? Because that's clearly your project.
No, because it sounds like that's always right. You always finish a bracha on the communal, right, to broaden the theme, right? But the center of the bracha is the personal part, right? Meaning that's the whole point. The bracha, the end of the bracha is communal, but right, that doesn't change. Right? You can't negate the community just because your primary concern is supposed to be what's personal, I think. Well, I mean, he says you can. I mean, that's the point. Okay, let me skip for a minute to the Ran. Okay, the Ran. Now, according to Ben Yonah, though, we said he thinks there's four stages here, but in each case, does he think that Shoel means you can, you may, or you must? You may, right? Who takes it even farther and says this is not about may, it's about must? The Ran, right? Like that was hinted at when I said, let's look at the Ran, then I asked the leading question, right? Okay, if you didn't get it, you know, okay. Number eight. So the Ran says, Im yesh l'chole v'toch beito, omra v'rchad acholim. What does it mean you ask in Rafa'eno? Who asked? Wait, someone asked me, well, maybe Shomei Tefillah, it doesn't matter, you asked me, right? Right, Shomei Tefillah, so I could either ask Rafa'eno or Shomei Tefillah, who cares? What does the Ran say? What does it mean, Shoel? Perish, eno reshai shiyam tina Shomei Tefillah. If you have a sick person in your house, you are not allowed to wait till Shomei HaTfilah. V'zeu mashachidesh Rabbi Chiya Barashi Rabbi Yehuda b'reid Rav Shelat b'reid Shem Bar Shelat miu im lo hisker at Shomei HaTfilah maskir. But if you didn't, then you can say it in Shomei HaTfilah. Does that sound like anything else you know that is actually like really important, central to Tfilah? Anything? And anything else that has that model. You must say it in the thematic bracha. And if you don't, you say in Shomei Tefillah. Yeah. Right. Thank you, Ezra. Right? V'tein talu matar levracha. Right? In the Brichat Hashanim, if I forget to say, right? If I ask you, when are you supposed to say v'tein talu matar levracha? Is it proper to say, well, either in Baruch Aleinu or in Shomei Tefillah? No. Right? That's not proper. What should you say? You're supposed to say it in Baruch Aleinu. What does it mean you're allowed to say it in Shomei Tefillah? B'diavad, if you forgot it, so then we don't make you repeat Shemona Esrei as long as you say it in Shema Koleinu. But clearly, you really must say it in the thematic bracha. And the Ran takes that model amazingly, and he says, that, one second, right, that's what this means. When we say, Shoel Adam Tzrachav, right, in Yesh L'chol V'Terech Beito, you have to ask in Rifa'inu, that means you must. Now, this is, in many ways, much farther than Rabbi Yonah. Right? Because he's not just telling you, you have the right to personalize tefillah. Right? He's telling you, you have a chiyuv, that when we instituted Shemona Esrei, going back to Ezra's point, did we restructure, did we change the essence of tefillah? No. We just structured it. And therefore, just like in general, let's take the Ramban. You have a chiyuv to daven when you have an eight sarah, right? When you're in distress. So before you had Shemona Esrei, so you would just turn to God and you would daven. And now you have Shemona Esrei. But you can't just say, well, now I have Shemona Esrei, and therefore I just read this litany of requests, and I don't actually think about what I need. Right? Just like the Ramban says, you have a mitzvah to daven be'et sarah. So if I have an eight sarah and I'm davening Shemona Esrei, I must daven. And where must I daven? In the thematic bracha. It's just structuring it. Right? I must. Now, before I take Ezra's point, but if we go back to our original question, so what would you think, according to the Ran, about, and this is how you read the Gemara, what would you think about davening for someone you don't know and don't really, I'm sorry to say it, but you don't really care about because you have the slightest idea who they are? It can't possibly fit in this model, right? Because there isn't that machayev, right? What obligates you to daven, to mention him in Rifeinu is, yesh l'chol v'toch beito, right? You have a need. You don't have a need. You don't personally have a need. When someone you don't know, right, you're sick. It might be nice to daven for them, but it can't possibly fit in this model. right? Because you don't feel it in that way. Yeah, Ezra.
It's very hard to say that, though, because the whole purpose was that we don't come up with our own words because we don't know how to talk. But now we're still chayav to come up with our own words, just there are other words which are good.
So good, right? So you'd have to say that according to the Ron, it must be that, well, once you have the basic structure, adding the words is not so hard, right? Like coming up with an entire bracha is hard. But to just say, like add like a sentence in the middle of an already structured bracha, right? You'd have to say, now, you could, if you wanted to, come to the conclusion that the Mari Molko does in the between 8 and 9. Ugh, I hate when it does this. It like changes to Aleph. So in 8 Aleph, right, the Mari Molcho is quoted in the Berke Yosef is saying, and this might be what motivates him, which is, what does it mean, Shoel? It means think about. Right? Meaning, same halacha as we just said, but not verbally. Right? That when we say that you ask in Rifa'enu, it doesn't mean you say it, it means you think about it. You still, right, are supposed to direct the request, but you think about it. Okay? Fine. We have three more shitot in the Rishonim to look at very quickly. Tosvot, the Rush, and the Meiri. So the Rush, what does the Rush say? So the Rush basically eliminates all this, right? So if you look at the Rush, he says, look, Harash is quoting the Beit Yosef. Lo hizkir davar mikol elo achilukim. He doesn't recognize these distinctions. Mashar shumen farish to ein chiluk bein shoal b'emtza bracha l'shoal b'sof kol mak l'shoal b'sof. There's no difference between the middle of the bracha, the end. V'chol makom yachol l'shoal bein l'lashon ravim bein l'lashon yachid. You can ask wherever you want, in singular, in plural. V'din shomei tshvila shavei l'shar bracha. And shomei tshvila is the same as everything else. So according to him, four different statements which mean the exact same thing. Ask whenever you want, however you want. What's the only difference? In Shomei Tefillah, which is generic, you ask for whatever you want. And then he says, so why does the Gemara say ask at the end of the bracha? Doesn't that imply that the end specifically? He says, no, end meaning not the beginning. Right? That's all it means. Right? So according to the Rush, very, very different conception of what formalized fila means, right? What does he think it is? You have like four different opportunities to ask for whatever you want, right? Whatever you want, right? Basically, instead of like a very formal idea that I formalize when you're supposed to think about certain issues, it's like, look, I give you like 10 opportunities because I know you're not concentrating. So like, whatever, here's a bunch of opportunities. And like, at some point in tefillah, when you have something going on, daven. That's what he says. Okay, Tosfot, what does Tosfot say? Tosfot also doesn't seem to distinguish that much. Tosfot makes one main distinction, and that is length. The difference is length, not theme. Right? You can ask for whatever you want. The only difference is that in the middle of the bracha, the end of the bracha, on Shomei Tefillah, it has to be short. And if you want to go on for 6 hours, you're allowed to, but only at the end. But fundamentally, does he believe in any of these distinctions? No. Okay. Meiri makes a very different distinction. Number 7. The Meiri says, Kfari Adata. Shishmona Esrei brachot shebetfilah nitkenu bichlal. Right? The brachot of Shishmona Esrei were established in general. Whatever you need. You can't ask for whatever you want except in very specific ways. So that if you want to say the end of each bracha, something on theme, you're allowed to. But only if you need it. So if you have someone sick in your home, you say it in Rifa'enu. If you have, you need a job, you say it in Baruch Aleinu. But it has to be on theme. Af bitzarich, even if you really need it. Avo berakat shomei tefillah kol mashe yirtzeh v'af kesheinu tzarich. Shomei tefillah, you ask for whatever you want, but you don't need. Right? So the Meiri thinks very differently. He says the earlier brachot are about need, Shomei Tefillah is about want.
Even if you don't need.
Right, even if you don't need, but you want it, so fine.
But if you need it also, you don't
need it. Yeah, if you need it, you could also put in Shomei Tefillah. But Shomei Tefillah, fundamentally, what it adds, someone asked, what does Shomei Tefillah add? So for Miri, it's about how much do you
want, need it.
Right, thank you. Want, need it. Where the line is between want, need, don't ask me. Formally, right? If I, how much, right, stress do I have to be under for it to go from need to, I don't know. Okay? I want to review with you for a second now what we've seen. Okay? So I asked you at the beginning. I said, I want to test the case. What do we know about the nature of tefillah that would influence how we think about how we're supposed to daven when we are bombarded with names of sick people that we don't know? Right? So now let's come back. According to the Rush, and according to Tosfot, more or less, what's the answer according to them? You can do whatever you want. In tefillah, it doesn't matter how much you need it, how much you want it, how much personal it is. If in any way, shape, or form it matters to me, I'm allowed to daven for it whenever. According to Tosfot, the only difference between the first three sections and the end of davening is how long I want to talk about it. Right? How many names? Yes. If I want to add one, two names, add Rafainu. If I have a list that's 200 pages long, yalla, put it at the end of Shmona Esrei, right? But what about for the Meiri, the Ran? And Rabbeinu Yonah, right? All of them are forcing you to ask what tefillah is. The Ran tells you what? The Ran tells you that there are certain things that you need that just like according to one shita in the Ramban, there is a, you are obligated when you're Be'et Sarah, when you're in distress to daven to God. How do we formalize that recognition? How do we formalize that notion into Shmona Esrei? That in the thematic one, I must daven it. I must. And in Shomei Tefillah, if I forgot, I can make it up. But if that can, is it plausible for the Ran to say that I'm obligated to daven for every sick person whose name I ever know? The point is that this is a formulation of a Ramban-esque idea. And when we say you ask in the bracha, it means you are obligated to channel that personal request in the bracha. And therefore, you have to ask yourself, how much do I really care? Is the type of thing that I plausibly feel I'm obligated to bring up or not? According to Rabbeinu Yonah, am I allowed to daven for things that don't matter so much to me? Yes, but what is the purpose of Shmona Esrei? What is its purpose? To force me to ask what? How much I care. And how much I need it. Right? According to Rabbeinu Yonah, every type of prayer matters. But we can't delude ourselves into thinking that every tefillah is equally important. You're not allowed to. According to him, the things that are the most personal are so central to the definition of tefillah that where do they go? In the middle of the bracha, and they don't count as a change in the bracha itself. If they're a little bit less personal, then where do they go? If it's someone I care about as part of Klal Yisrael, where does it go? Before that. At the end of the bracha, which is on theme, but specifically in we rather than me, right? In plural rather than singular language. And then things that I care about less and are more in the farther outer concentric circles, Shema Koleinu at the end of Shmona Esrei. Right? And according to the Meiri, what am I forced to do? What is Shmona Esrei meant to force me to think about? Whether I need it or I want it. If I need it, it can go in the thematic brachot. And if I want it, it goes in Shomei Tefillah. So if we bring it halacha l'maisa, and I ask you, okay, so someone gives you a name. Or if someone you don't know, what is the right thing to do? So according to the Rosh and according to Tosa, do you have the right to put it wherever you want? You do. Right? And maybe that's how we paskin. But you're missing something about tefillah. If you don't realize that, right, Rabbeinu Yonah, the Meiri and the Ran are all giving you models that remind you that, wait a second, tefillah is supposed to be, right, what defines tefillah at its core is davening for that which you need, right, that which is personal. And if you don't acknowledge that for Rabbeinu Yonah, for the Ran and the Meiri, then you're missing what tefillah is. You're not taking it seriously. And therefore, according to them, right, if you were given a name that you don't know, right, and again, I want to think about this because this is the season of tefillah. We talk about tefillah and its power, but do we ask ourselves, well, what is tefillah? Is it just I'm davening more and more and more? No. According to the Shita, you have to remember, what is tefillah? It's taking seriously what I need, what I want, how much do I need it, in what way, is it personal, is it me as a member of a community, is it me as an individual? That matters and has halachic implications, right? That matters, right? That conceptualization of what did the Amidah do and how did it transform the personal nature of tefillah, right? That matters practically. And therefore, right, we're so desensitized to tefillah sometimes, right? We're so desensitized to it. Right, we run through it, and we're not the only ones. Right, if you read the Rishalmi and Brachot, it famously says that the Amoraim also didn't pay attention in Shemoneh Esrei. Right, one of them says, "I thank my head because it knows when to bow." Right, another one said, "I count bricks during Shemoneh Esrei." Right, right, meaning losing kavanah is not a new thing. Tefillah is hard, but if we don't even try to think about what it's supposed to be, we're just going to remain with it. Right. Part of it is that we're just so desensitized. We're like, okay, I have this litany of things. It doesn't really matter. Okay, I need it. I don't need it. But when you read the Ron, you read Rabbeinu Yonah, you read the Shita, you realize, no, it matters. You're supposed to, you have to ask yourself, how much do I need it? How personal is it? Right? Is this a need or a want? And how you answer that question changes when you're obligated or allowed to incorporate it into tefillah. Right? Which means that every time you enter tefillah, according to these Rishonim, you're forced to be honest with yourself, right? How much do I care? Now, if you come back to the opening story of the Shlomo Zalman Maral Diskin, could it be that you can bring yourself to be the type of person that every person is personal to you? Maybe. But if you're not, according to these Rishonim, you have to be honest about it, right? You can't just, it can't be false concern, right? Because then you might end up davening for them the wrong bracha and might be hefsek, right? Like this actually has stakes. And I'll just tell you outside, because we have a minute, I don't want to go over time. The Piskei Tshuvot highlights the fact that the reason these halachot, and that's what I've been getting at, are so important is because of what we've been saying. That if tefillah started as avodah shebalev, and it expresses what's in, right, what's internal, then for that to be lost would be a tragedy. And these halachot, the fact that you can or must add your personal request in tefillah is what reminds you of what tefillah is in its original form. Right? That's why these halachot are important, because they remind you how much tefillah is about expressing where you actually stand, what you actually need, what you actually desire, where you stand in your posture with God. Right? That's why this is so important. I gave you, if you want to look, a halacha l'maisa, the discussion of family members and not family members. I'll just note that one other nafkamin at the end, and this is the last page, but I won't read it inside, is that... another thing you just have to think about when you're davening for people that you don't see is that there is a halachic difference between davening for people in their presence and not, in terms of whether you have to mention their name or not, right? When you're davening the presence of someone, you don't have to answer, you don't have to say their name. And when you're not davening their presence, you do. And there's halachic differences between that. And according to definitely more mystical thinkers, there's also metaphysical impact of this. And you can look at the Chasam Sofer, but I don't have time to get into that because I am out of time. I'll take a question or two, but really do need to start. Mariv, but again, my goal with this shiur was just to get you to the point to realize, right, that A, we're often so desensitized, but this sugya reminds you that you can't, because tefillah is trying to force you to ask those questions that make tefillah personal again, right, point one. And point two is that instant communication has made it so easy for us to be desensitized to it because we're constantly bombarded by need, right? And it sometimes makes us desensitized to the human experience. That's a problem in general, insofar as we are people, and being desensitized to being people is a problem, but it also has halachic implications. And tefillah is the place where you see that. And I think in general, it's just important to think about the ways in which the experience of our lives has been affected by things like technology and what impact that might be have in halacha in surprising ways, which I tried to show you here. If we have any questions, I will take either from you guys or from parents. And otherwise, we will go to Mariv. Okay, we're going to go to Mariv. Gemar Chatima Tova to everyone. And like I said, the next Parents on Learning will be, I believe, on the 30th.